Ultralight and gyroplane CFIs keep getting harder to find. What's the FAA thinking? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is fellow podcaster Roy Beiswinger, who it's been 15 years or more now that you've been doing Ultraflight Radio and just changed the name.
It's been a decade, and it has, just changed the name to kind of update things. The content had been for years going more and more toward a bigger tent, all of the single and two-seat ultralight and light sport aircraft. It was one of those things we didn't want to lose the name, but at the same time, we knew we had to move on and kind of reflect what we were doing.
Well, that'll be a discussion for another day, in fact, for tomorrow. But today, I want to talk about an issue that has been a big deal for you because how close you are to the community. I think many people in general aviation don't understand the challenges facing those who want to fly Part 103 aircraft, or even some of the ELSAs. And recently, the U.S. Ultralight Association issued a call to the FAA to correct an unsafe situation. Tell us what that situation is and how it developed.
Well, the situation has been long brewing, and it's been something that was a lot of people saw years ago that this would be a problem down the line, but we also saw a solution that was also out there. So people didn't get really worried until the FAA didn't start implementing the solution. The problem is for a lot of instructors who are, for the most part, I like to refer to them as semi-pros, in that they normally have day jobs, they normally have something else they're doing, because either for seasonal reasons or for the reason that there's just not a lot of money to be made really being an ultralight instructor. I mean, it's something you do for the love of it. Cannot get the equipment that they started out with certain equipment, and now their equipment is being made illegal and kind of taken out from under their feet. They're losing the way to make their living.
Ultralight instructor has always been kind of an oxymoron, especially now, because the aircraft that used to be called fat ultralights or ultralight trainers are now light sport aircraft, and a lot of them are ELSAs. And if I understand it correctly, that's the category where the real problem exists.
Well, it is, because, again, these guys who started out, and I probably didn't answer the question properly initially, that everybody started out with aircraft, and the true instructors were operating under exemptions, and they truly purchased their aircraft for performing instruction. A lot of people didn't. A lot of people did it because they'd become instructors, and they'd, in quotes, okay, little air quotes around that, in order to be able to take mama for a flight, okay? And those guys were the ones where the whole ELSA thing was a godsend, because now they could go ahead and they could become sport pilots and they could forget having to be pretend instructors. The irony was is that the real instructors, the guys who were playing by the rules that were established 10, 15 years ago, and continued on, particularly the ones who continued on and got their CFI status and, became, certified pilots and did all the things they want to do. Now they're finding themselves at a point where this final deadline that happened January 31st, if they don't somehow get new equipment to train in, if they don't start purchasing SLSA equipment, they're out of business. So the guys who actually did play by the rules all through this are now finding themselves kind of over a barrel. And most of them are taking a hard look at this, a hard financial look at it, and saying, I can't afford to be an instructor. And that's, everybody makes their own decisions in life, but the CFI touch so many people's lives and potentially touch so many people's lives. An instructor could be out there and he decides not to instruct anymore. Well, there's a whole circle of potential pilots who are either going to do it on their own, okay, because it's legal to do it on your own as an ultralight guy, or they're not going to get involved at all, which is a detriment to the entire sport. So at the best case for the FAA, we have people don't flying because those people aren't going to be illegal. They're not going to get hurt. Or worst case, they're out there trying to fly, but they can potentially get themselves into a little bit of trouble. And that is just, from the USUA's point of view, is just completely unacceptable. I mean, we had an exemption program. We had a training program that was designed to keep people safe. That was replaced by something new, and that's fine, but there has to be a recognition of the economic realities of a sport that is a sport. I mean, people fly GA for all kinds of reasons, and people instruct in GA aircraft for all kinds of reasons. One of the big reasons is you got the young guy who's trying to build time in order to be, go on to bigger and better things, wants to become an airline pilot or wants to wants to become an instructor for bigger, faster stuff.
Right.
Those guys are moving on to other things. Well, the guys who are training ultralight aircraft, you know, they don't want to become jet guys. They like what they're doing. They're mature guys, and they're going to have to make some hard decisions about their future.
Well, now let's talk about ELSA versus SLSA, because sure. I think that's part of it. I don't have a sound enough knowledge of that side of the sport, at least on the fixed wing side, to know if there is comparable SLSA equipment even available to replace an ELSA. Or is it just a matter of what hoops the manufacturer has gone through, or are there SLSAs for which there is no ELSA equivalent?
There are, and you've actually hit upon two important points. And one of them is, somebody did a survey, there are about three models of aircraft on the fixed wing side that are similar to, have the, you know, below 87 knot the top airspeed that fit fit the mold of the ultralight aircraft. You know, they're the open air with the Dacron wings and the aluminum tubing, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of manufacturers who have stayed out, either because it didn't make financial sense for them to pursue it, or because they chose, just to do other things. And that's happened quite a bit, I think, in the lighter side of the ultralight industry. Everybody looks at all the aircraft and all the manufacturers that have come in at the top end, kind of ignoring the fact that there's a lot of guys at the bottom end that kind of dropped out. So that is the half of it, that there is a reduced availability. I think there's three aircraft or three different models out there that could do the job. The other part of it, though, is those models now, and this is not a fault of the manufacturers. This is just an economic reality, where before they were building kits, right? Now they're building full-up airplanes. They're having to have those things certified, and there's a lot more labor involved in that. So a new instructor or an existing instructor is going to have to sell their aircraft at a loss because the market's kind of dropped out,
right,
and then invest in a whole new aircraft that's similar, but it just doesn't make any sense for them to do that.
Well, you know, this kind of plays into, I know looking at it from the gyroplane side, it's particularly frustrating because gyroplanes, while you can get a sport pilot gyroplane certificate, there are no actual LSAs available on the market right now. And it looks like that drought may break this summer, but the exemptions being allowed are going to be ELSA,
mm-hmm,
which means they're going to fall into the same trap of needing a letter of deviation authority to be able to use them for instruction. And at this point, the FAA has now, it's been 2 years that the FAA has changed language, which leads its local field offices to believe that they should not be issuing LOTAs for any gyroplane. So gyroplane training is slowly drying up.
Yeah.
And it's almost, this almost plays into the conspiracy theorists who say the FAA just doesn't want anybody flying ultralights and wants to kill everybody off who is.
You know, that would assume they care.
Okay.
And I don't buy into the conspiracy thing, because I just don't think that for a lot of people within the FAA, you know, they're chasing jets, they're chasing high-end helicopters, or there's nothing glamorous about ultralights. I think it's just benign neglect here. They don't dislike anything. They just don't want to have anything to do with it. And gyros are they're in a bad spot, because the Rotorcraft Directorate in Texas really does not like the gyroplane community. They're all a bunch of retired helicopter guys, and that's what they like, and they figure the gyros are probably worse than ultralights in their eyes. And what they want to do, well, they just didn't want to play. They just, when the whole sport pilot thing came about, they said, nope, we're not going to sign off on the idea of having SLSA gyroplanes. Now, there were things held out to the gyroplane community, and the gyroplane community is a, they are a great, enthusiastic group of people, and they have been trying their darndest to play by the rules, but it's one of those situations where they're feeling like the goalpost is constantly being moved on them.
Well, Roy, in the spirit of bring me solutions, not problems, I want to talk about solutions when we get back. Roy Beiswinger is my guest. More in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plagg, talking today with Roy Beiswinger of Powered Sport Aviation Magazine about how ultralight and gyroplane instructors are being put between a rock and a hard place by the FAA. Roy, before we leave this topic today, what do you see coming as a resolution to this, or do you?
Right now, I really am got high hopes that the FAA is going to do the right thing, and the FAA is going to establish LOTAs, particularly for the rotorcraft community, but also for the safety of the entire low end of the community. I mean, there's a lot of folks that it becomes a matter sometimes of just not a matter of not wanting to afford the aircraft, but just looking at and saying, look, I am never, ever going to make back the money that I'm going to invest in a new piece of equipment. It's just
right.
Not going to happen. And it's okay for individuals to make those specific economic decisions for themselves, but where it hurts the larger community is now we've lost another practicing CFI. We lost so many practicing instructors when the sport pilot rules came to being. And I think... Well, I knew that was going to happen. I think a lot of other people recognized that too. But I think it's a little worse than anybody guessed. And now it's just a little bit of piling on. Now everybody's played by the rule book all the way up to now and was hoping that the regulation was going to be adhered to. And there is a regulation in Part 91 that says we can establish letters of deviation authority or the FAA being the we, on a case-by-case basis. But unless the guidance is published by Washington, there's going to be a lot of FAA guys, inspectors, who are going to say, you know, if in absence of guidance, the safe bureaucratic solution is don't issue anything.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen is that the ultralight community is going to be dead, the cause of death is going to be bureaucracy.
Well, Roy, I hate to leave it on a down note, but I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens over the course of the summer.
I'm hoping it's going to be before summer.
And what I'd like to do is tomorrow, I'd like to get you back to talk about the changes in Ultraflight Magazine, because you've kind of restructured and there's some interesting things going on.
Love to do it.
My guest has been Roy Beiswinger of Ultraflight Radio, Ultraflight Magazine, which is now becoming Power Sport Aviation Magazine, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.